The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3. Influence with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Imagine at the age of 22 having the courage to start your own business in an industry when you have no prior experience in this particular line, but you do have a passion for the product. We're talking today with Lynn Tan, Managing Director of the Alice Group Singapore Private Limited. A little background about Lynn. She worked right after graduating from Ngee Ann Polytechnic at the age of 19. She worked in advertising, and then at the age of 22, she joined the beauty distribution industry. So from the inside, she decided, I think I can make this happen for myself. She had no experience when she was part of this, move to start her own distribution of Fito. She came across a golden opportunity to take over Fito's distribution in Singapore. And Lynn, for the people out there who aren't familiar with Fito, can you share with us a little bit about what they do? First of all, good morning.
Good morning, Michelle.
And welcome to Influence. When people hear Fito, what do you want them to think?
When they think of Fito, it means plants. That's what it means in French. Mm-hmm. And it's a plant-based hair care. It's 50 years old, everything is still made in France, high quality, efficient hair care brand.
So you're 23 years old, take us back to the past. No personal savings. You're not exactly bankrolled by the bank of daddy,
no.
Right? You don't come from a family dynasty.
No.
You start your own business, how exactly?
See, the opportunity came for me to start Fito, and I looked around my family, okay, who can I look at? And I had one mentor, which is my uncle. He is a self-made businessman. And I went to him, I gave him my idea of this business I wanted to start. He said, okay, Lynn, I would loan you a $50,000. Then I'm like, okay, I'll take this money and I'll run with it. But he was a bit skeptical because it was the SARS period.
This was
2003.
Right.
So it was SARS. He's like, you should be selling face masks.
Oh, what he told me to go and sell face masks.
I'm like, no, I really believe in this brand Fito and I want to take it.
But at the time you were working for somebody who had tried to distribute Fito and failed.
Yes, and they wanted to give it up. So I'm like, oh, okay, then why not let me take over. I want to do it. Let me try.
Why? What was fueling the passion?
I guess because the brand itself changed
it?
My life. Yes, I have always had, like, one of the things, I had dandruff for a long time, since I was a teenager. Every 2 weeks I have dandruff and every 2 weeks I don't. It's like a hormonal problem I had. You get it?
Wow.
So when I used Fito, it stopped. And for the first time in my life, I had no dandruff for 2 weeks. Just maybe 1-2 days when it comes. I'm like, wow, this brand is fantastic, but no one knows about it. No one's heard of it. Such a pity.
How was it that it had failed until then? Because it was the distribution firm that you were working for that was actually just trying to make Fito a success, and they had failed.
I think they failed because their emphasis as a company was towards the beauty salons and spas, and Fito was a hair care brand and for the retail market. And they didn't have any other brands in the retail market. So I guess if you looked at it, their strengths were not there.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So maybe that's why.
$50,000 in loan from uncle. When did you pay that back?
Maybe third or fourth year later.
Oh my goodness.
With interest.
Can I ask how much you charge interest-wise?
He didn't charge, but I gave it.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah, I think I took a bit too long, I guess, to return that money. I had a daughter along the way. I had things to pay, lots of reasons. But anyway,
so you have to learn the ins and outs of the beauty distribution industry then, because you're looking for new exit points or new markets, so to speak.
New distribution points,
yeah.
Yes. When we started, we were only in Robinson's and hair salons. When we took over, I went into every possible channel you can think of, every retail channels and salons. And we grew up to like 400 point of sales in Singapore. And we were even like one of the top hair care brands in AC Nelson for one of the years. And I didn't even know that because I don't buy that report. you just keep selling, right? And it's nice.
So the product sold itself, you think, and also you put in the legwork to find new...
I think it's the strategy that I put behind it, because I don't have a lot of money to spend. So I had to be very strategic about how I market the brand. And I looked at the whole market. Everyone was fighting about dry hair. And I looked at my products. Fito was the first in the world to create women's hair loss. And I'm like, yeah, let's talk about women's hair loss, because we are the first in the world to create it and we have such high efficacy on it. So I just zeroed in on this one range and it proved to be very successful.
Your hair is looking great, by the way.
Thank you.
Very full.
Thank you.
Women's hair loss. So that was a strategy from 2003 for Fito. Mm. And it's also big in Russia, not just in Singapore?
In the whole world. It's very big. It's just that Singapore was a second best distributor for them after their own subsidiaries.
So you grew it from failing
from market. I think they were purchasing 100,000 euros a month to, like, I purchased up to above 5 million euros.
Why did your uncle lend you the money? Did you ever find out?
He's my uncle. He's a sweet man. You know,
and
I believe he did. I'm his niece and one of his, maybe his favorite. I like to think I am. And
was he an entrepreneur? Did you have to run the business plan through him?
I did not have to run through the business plan with him. That's how much faith he had in me, I believe.
After this, can I get your uncle's number?
Yeah, sure. He's still very sweet. He still comes to my store a lot and gives me advice. He sees my products on the magazines. He will pull it up and, you know, cut it out for me.
That's wonderful. He had a big part to play in
He had. He's definitely one of my mentors and my benefactor.
And a big part of the story since. You've been in the business for 16 years, if we move forward in time. So you've seen a lot of change, right? If you were to do business today and look at the link between brand and consumers, how do you see the position of the middleman? I mean, would you have been able to replicate your success back in 2003 today, where it seems like most companies are cutting out the middleman?
Yes, I think the days of the middleman are over. Especially for a lot of markets, industries in certain countries, for sure. In Singapore, we are free trade. There's lots of parallel. So I don't think it's the same model could work. It worked 10 years ago. It definitely worked 20 years ago. But now I don't think you need it. In fact, things could be run much more efficiently without the middleman.
Right.
Which is maybe why I decide not to be a middleman anymore and become their subsidiary instead.
Ah, yeah. Tell me about the evolution of the business.
When you look at the way the e-commerce is evolving and how rapidly it came about, it didn't make sense for me to stay where I am. I had to change the way I worked. I had to change drastically. If not, I don't think I would survive as a distributor. The more successful you become, you get to compete with your own brand because lots of parallel comes in. If the brand is not successful, it's not profitable. So it's a double-edged sword.
So what do you mean by subsidiary? What do you do differently?
So what happens is I went back to my wonderful Fito principal and I said, I have a new business proposition for you.
When was that, by the way?
This was in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah, 2015. You could really see the market trending in a particular sense. And I said, the distribution model doesn't work going forward. Mm. We need to change. So I went to them with an agency model instead, where I still do the same job for you, but it's an agency model. And they actually buy in that idea. It makes sense. They could take in the top dollar instead of just the distributor's cost. They take it at the top dollar and I can earn a cut from everything that they sold. So I could still keep my team and we can still run the same business, except the model is very different. I don't buy the goods anymore. The goods belong to them. Marketing cost belongs to them, et cetera, et cetera. So that model worked, but they decided that, they wanted me to just do it solely for them. So then that's how the whole negotiation started, where I became acquired by them and became their subsidiary.
You were acquired by Fito.
Mm.
Wow.
In 2017, officially.
It could be a better story than that, right?
Yeah,
the brand
that
you believe in believes in you so much.
We came full circle.
They bought you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Does Uncle wish that he had shares in your business?
I think a lot of people did.
Let's talk about the product, Fito. It's known for, you know, being a brand that's botanical in spirit and, you know, content-wise, so it doesn't use chemicals. In fact, that's what the founder wanted to move away from, because he was a hairstylist, right?
That's right.
And he could see on his hands what the early hair care products were doing to his
scalp.
So when it comes to making informed decisions, do you think it's important that those brands are open with their customers in terms of what's in the product? And is that what Fito has done from get-go?
I think it's very hard to control what brands want to sell themselves as. So as consumers, we have to be, you know, able to consciously read the ingredients that they put inside. And just like what we read when we eat something, we read what's put inside. If you look at the ingredients listing, it starts with the highest concentration to the lowest. And that can't lie. Those are facts. And if more consumers read what's put in their products, they would see sometimes it's not as true as it seems.
Yeah. It hardly sounds like it's written in English, though, a lot of the ingredients.
And so the good thing about Phyto is when we release our ingredients listing, we kind of change the colour or bold all the plant ingredients, and you can see the high concentration that we have in our ingredients.
Oh.
That is practically either like 90 to 100% all natural. You can see it from the ingredients listing.
Well, you know, I was at an event celebrating Phyto's 50th anniversary.
Right.
And when it came to the time for people to choose their hair care products, I noticed that the line for dry hair, while long, was not as long as the line for products that had to do with hair loss.
Yes.
So your strategy in 2003 was, let's talk about hair loss, let's talk about hair loss for women.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's still a big problem in terms of, you know, what sells off the shelves. Is that still what drives the brand here?
Yes, I believe so. My philosophy has always been, dry hair is nothing when you have no hair. So let's salvage the hair first and let's talk about dry hair later. That's easy. You can just chop it off, you know.
Yeah, it looks like you were ahead of the curve, really. For Phyto or any other hair care brand in the market, do you have some tips maybe from your own lessons on how a business can profit and do so purposefully?
Yes, moving forward, I at running a business for 16 years, I always believed that every business could spend conscious effort to also think about the greater good, you know, in a small way or other, either through monetarily or through efforts by the company, that it can do a bit more than just bottom line and about profits. And it could be very much in line with their own company. So if, say, for example, for Phyto, we use a lot of plant-based products. So planting trees, keeping products environmentally friendly, using packaging that's environmentally friendly is very important to us. So other companies, maybe, for example, you could be a real estate company. You could also sell real estate. At the same time, you can make homes for the poor. So these things could be in line with your company. It gives the company, as well as the staff, a greater purpose than just profits.
What advice do you have for other listeners out there who really want to start developing their own business but maybe don't have the capital to get going?
I think nowadays it's very trendy to get crowdfunded and to get investors. In fact, I learned there's a lot of places where you could get investment from, even for brick and mortar businesses, not just for the tech businesses. I guess it's all about selling the right story and having the right purpose. And I guess a lot of them want to know, what makes you want to do this business? And I guess if the story is compelling enough and the product makes sense, then it's highly possible to get lots of funding just by selling your story well.
So how are you selling the Phyto story now compared to how you did when you first started?
I'm in a very different place. We have managed to establish a very good presence in Singapore for Phyto.
Yes, which is spelled P-H-Y-T-O, I must say that. Because the first time I saw it, I thought it was pronounced Phyto. But go ahead,
Yes, I remember when I started the brand Phyto and I told people I'm selling Phyto, they're like, what's that? Can you eat it? They had no idea. You know, it's very funny. But after a few years, when you go to a social event and you tell them I'm selling Phyto, they're like, oh yeah, I use it. Oh, I've used it before, I'm using it now. So it's really nice how it's evolved. So I want to get the same presence, but around Asia Pacific. I think after doing so well in Singapore, next thing is to really do the same in other countries around us.
Where are you looking at expanding? Are you in China at all?
We are. But I think it could grow even more prominence. And definitely LS Group wants to do that. And Asia's a big potential. We're going to intensively focus in this area, Asia Pacific, and grow it intensively for the next few years.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you.
You are such a down-to-earth entrepreneur and still so full of passion for your product, I have to say.
Thank you.
Great ambassadress as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Her name is Lynn Tan, and she is the director of the Alice Group Singapore Private Limited. This is Influence. I'm Michelle Martin.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.